Welcome to the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Josiah Smelser. The Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast is the shared journey of building a real estate investment property business from square one. Join me as we learn together how to conquer the real estate game to reach financial freedom. Together, we will learn from people in all areas of real estate and business in our personal trek towards escaping the rat race. Be you. Do the work you love. Play the long game. What's up, guys? We're back for another episode of the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. Thanks for tuning in today. Today, I've got John Fontana. John is out of Florida. He's built a little real estate investing portfolio that I think's a really great story. He's making a lot of positive moves and headway on his investing journey. He's also got a side hustle business I think you'll find very interesting. And John is planning to move into investing in bigger projects and even some multifamily possibly. And we had a really great conversation, kind of walk through his strategy and what's helped him become successful in real estate investing. And I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. On another note, I am working on a multifamily deal. It's a new build. It's looking like it's going to be around at least 250 doors in the first phase. So this is a bigger project that I've worked on before, and I'm really excited about it. Love to give you some more details on that on down the line. But it has been a lot of fun so far, and I'm pumped about the progress that's being made. Hope you guys are all doing well. Hope you're hanging in there and everyone's staying healthy. This is being recorded December 17th, 2020. At least this intro is. The episode with John was recorded a while back, but the intro is being recorded now, and hope you guys are have a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, and know that I appreciate you listening to my show. And so without further ado, let's dive into this episode. Real quick, I wanted to let you know that I'm now offering coaching and consulting on a limited basis at a very affordable rate. If you have a project you're working on or struggling with identifying and creating a plan to reach your goals, this could be a good fit for you. Feel free to reach out to me at Daily Real Estate Investor on Instagram and shoot me a direct message there or send me an email. The email is josiahsmelser@gmail.com. That's josiahsmelser@gmail.com. Also, check out my book, Dream It and Build It, How to Crush Your Real Estate Investing Goals. You can find it on Amazon. Now let's dive into our episode. John, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Josiah, how you doing? Thanks for having me today.
I'm doing great. Yeah, I'm excited to have you. John and I connected over Instagram. He's got some really cool stuff going on with his real estate business and real estate goals. And he's also running a really cool business himself outside of real estate that I'm going to enjoy learning about and him sharing that. But John, tell us a little bit about you and where you live, your family, what you do for a living, that kind of thing.
Gotcha. I am born and raised in Florida, Tampa, Florida, to be exact. I've never lived outside the state of Florida. I went to college at University of Florida, came right back to Tampa, worked in the corporate consulting world my first couple of years out of school. After getting my master's and realized that wasn't for me working for someone else. At that time, it was around 2008, 2009, 2010, when there was some good deals coming out for the housing market. And I bought my first property, a three-bedroom townhome in the South Tampa area. So real affluent area for people here in Tampa. And at the time, I didn't realize what I was doing, but I was actually house hacking. Rented out two rooms to some buddies from college, and they were paying the mortgage off, and I was living rent-free and traveling all over the world. So I was able to kind of save up some money during that time. And then it was while that was going on that I left to go start doing real estate full-time, and I started a cleaning company. It was my first kind of venture to my own business on my own while I was doing the real estate stuff. And then over time, it just kind of grew into this big thing. And now we own 26 properties or 26 doors in the Tampa area and a couple down in Fort Lauderdale. And now I do the real estate stuff half time. And then a couple of years ago, I just got into the franchise world, and that's where the Lego business comes in. It's called Bricks for Kids, where we teach kids school subjects using Legos. So we do like after school programs, camps, birthday parties, and then I make custom Lego art for people's businesses and homes and stuff like that. So
That's awesome. So how does Bricks for Kids work? I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, so it's actually a worldwide franchise. It was founded in 2010, I believe, and it's kind of founded as an after school enrichment program. So now with COVID, it's a little different, but normally, when kids are going to school, after school, they sign up for clubs, so like soccer or art or music or something like that. STEM has become a big word in the education world: science, technology, engineering, and math. So, Bricks for Kids is an after-school STEM program that teaches kids STEM using Lego bricks. So we build Lego robots and 3D sculptures and art and stuff like that in the after-school programs. And then we also do stuff when the kids aren't in school. So we'll do like summer camps and winter break camps and spring break camps, and parents basically just register their kids for our programs.
That's awesome. Super cool. Yeah, learn something every day. I'll have to check that out. And tell us how old you are.
I'm 36.
36. Okay. And you're married with children, correct?
I'm married with 2 5-month-old identical twin girls. So,
That's awesome. Oh man. Twins and 5 months old. You're coming out of the fire right there. So,
We're blessed. They're pretty good babies, but it definitely is a lot of work. So,
It's life-changing for sure to have children, so, and little children as well. Very cool. So 26 doors. Definitely want to dive into this. You're in Tampa, Florida. It's a hot market. Let's talk about, for those that aren't familiar with the Tampa, Florida market, let's talk about what the average price is for, let's say, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1500 square foot house in Tampa.
In the Tampa area, that's going to be right now, and around the upper 200s, lower 300s, area. And that's not for anything new. That's for a that could be for a 1925 bungalow. So,
And what would something like that rent for? Let's say it's selling for 300,000, 1500 square feet, 3-bed, 2-bath.
depending on the area, if something along those lines, you're going to be a little bit outside of that South Tampa, kind of more where the price points are the highest. You're looking anywhere between $1,500 to $2,000 a month for a 2 bath, somewhere in there.
So not even getting close to the 1% rent
No.
ratio. You're running like 0.5 to 0.75 or 0.7 or 0.65, something like that. So
Exactly.
yeah, which makes it difficult to go and buy your average house and rent it out and cash flow, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the biggest challenge right now is trying to find deals, like everyone else.
So I know there's listeners that empathize with this problem. I empathize with this problem. I'm in Huntsville, Alabama. It's not that drastic of an issue on the rent ratio, but I would say the average property here, and certainly there are tails to this, some much cheaper, some much more expensive, but I would say the average house is probably, 200, 225, something like that, and would rent for, 1500. 1400, something like that. So you're running into the same problem, so not at the 1% rent ratio. Now there are pockets of Huntsville that do cash flow, and that's the areas that the investors are targeting. And for those that don't remember what the rent ratio represents, that is the monthly rent divided by the cost of the property. So if you've got a property renting for $1,000 a month and it costs you $100,000, or it's worth $100,000, that's a 1% rent ratio. So that's a really easy way to tell how well or poorly this thing's going to cash flow. When you get below 1%, it's not cash flowing well. Typically, you see a sliding scale where, as the rent ratio goes down, the quality of the neighborhood goes up. And so the nicest neighborhoods, let's say in this example of Tampa, where the properties are 500 grand, they may rent for, $2,200 a month. So your rent ratio is going to be really low, but those neighborhoods are going to be A plus class neighborhoods. So appreciation may be good, but they don't cash flow. So you said you've got 26 doors. You said you started with a house hack, I believe. How did you build this portfolio? How did you structure your partnership, and what's been your approach?
Gotcha. So the first home I bought, it was a townhome in that South Tampa area. And at the time, I was not looking to be a real estate investor. It just happened to be I was at the right place at the right time. And we got that property at a really, really good price. Again, this was, 2009. So at the time, these townhomes were built in 2005 and were going for like $600,000-$700,000. And then the market crashes, and I was able to get mine for 270. So I got into it at a really, really good price, and the rents were still pretty strong because of the area that was in was a young professional area that a lot of people wanted to live in. So even renting the rooms out to my two friends, I was able to pay that mortgage pretty easily. And then at that time, my dad, he was actually the GM of the Hard Rock Casino here in Tampa for his whole career. He recently retired, but he's looking for something to do with some of his money. And we realized at the time real estate was a pretty smart move because you could get a lot of stuff pretty cheap. So we weren't super aggressive at the beginning. We worked with the local realtor. Read some real estate websites and books and property management stuff and figured out where we should be price point wise. And at the time we were working on cap rates, and our minimum was a 10% cap rate, which is like impossible to find now, but at the time you could find those pretty easily. So we bought really smart, and we bought about one or two properties a year. The first one we bought from our partnership was actually a fourplex in the St. Petersburg area. So that's it's right next to the Tampa area. And that's more of like a beachy kind of crowd. And that area at the time was kind of in the dumps, but recently it's had this renaissance in the past decade. So that those properties have all, almost doubled in value at this point. So we've bought really smart. We haven't necessarily stuck to one type of house. Most of our stuff is townhomes or duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, stuff like that. We have a couple of condos located near the local college that rent really easily to college students we got really cheap that have low HOAs. So we've accumulated 2 to 3 properties a year. But more recently though, because my Lego business is kind of stabilized and I don't have to spend so much on the day to day, we're kind of refocusing our energy back into the real estate market, and using a lot of that equity that we built in our properties to refinance and use some of that equity to buy, new properties, while also repositioning ourselves and selling some of the properties that we feel like have kind of gotten to the height of where they're going to be, and cash out and use that money to buy, other properties in different areas. So.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good stuff to unpack. One thing I would like to talk about first is it's interesting that you guys are taking some equity out of your properties and repurposing that equity. We're actually doing the exact same thing. We've got over 30% equity in our portfolio, and we're examining basically our cash on cash return, right? We're looking at our cash return on the equity that we have there. And when I say cash on cash, that's not, I'm basically cash on equity, if you will, return on equity. Because the cash we put in, we use the BRRRR strategy, buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. That's how we built this portfolio. But we've now got a lot more equity than the cash we put in. And you get to a point where, like your situation, you bought this townhouse. It's almost doubled in value, and you're looking at, okay, this, we owe 200 on this. This is worth 400, and I'm getting, $300 of profit a month. My return on equity is not near what it could be if I took this cash and repurposed it somewhere else. And so I guess the game is figuring out, how to either refinance, access some of that equity while, still making that cash flow and hanging on to it, or selling it, doing a 1031 into something that's going to really boost your cash on cash return and your cash on equity. And we're actually going through this process now. We're taking some properties that have some thin profit per month and selling those that have a good bit of equity, and then putting that equity in deals that are going to really make our numbers fly off the page as far as cash on cash return. So this is actually a really good time to do this because this is a seller's market. People are fighting over properties. You and I talked off the podcast. There's a lot of people in Tampa looking for deals. There's not a lot of deals to be had. So this is a really good time to sell, as long as you can find somewhere to put your money once you sell, right?
And
So
that's
what,
the problem. It's
yeah, that's
tough
the problem.
to put that money in. And one of the strategies that we're trying to implement is through a partnership with a friend of mine from who has a lot of some of the homes that we own have accommodation dwellings or mother-in-law suites on the back. So, we own a couple bungalows that are 2-bed, 1-bath bungalows, and then in the back they have an over the garage apartment. And rents are so strong and high here that those garage apartments are renting for the same price as the bungalow in the front,
Yeah.
So what our strategy now is to do is what we're trying to implement is finding properties that have that are in areas that are, and I know the zoning is different depending on where you live, but that is zoned or Res 50, so it's zoned for a higher density of residential living. And then being able to build, turn our single family home properties into have two units on them. So building an accommodation dwelling or a mother-in-law suite in the back, and then doubling the rental income on that property. Because if you can find properties that, they might be a little bit higher just based off, it might not make a lot of sense. Buying it just off of one rental income from that one bungalow, but if you can build the house in the back for an efficient price and then rent it for a little bit more than that 1%, rent roll, then you might be able to make up for that overspending on the initial house that you bought, just to get on
Absolutely.
property. So that's our strategy that we're trying to implement now. One, just because we feel that it's smart and it's a way to make the property a lot more valuable. But two, there's not a ton of people in our area doing that yet. And it's something that we feel like if we can, get that rezoning process down and meet the right people and get a formula for it, and then get a contractor that can build, this perfect little accommodation dwelling the same every single time, is something we can replicate over and over and over again. So that's something we're putting a lot of our focus into right now.
Yeah, and you've heard before, or you hear from some people, oh, I can't find a deal here, right? Oh, the market's too hot. I can't find a deal. A lot of times you have to create a deal, and what John is talking about here is paying, buying a property at a rent ratio that's below one, and then adding, creating value by adding a unit in the back of the property because the zoning allows that, and that allows, of course, more rent to be charged, and that can get you above that 1% rent ratio. And this is a creative way to be able to create a deal out of something that doesn't on the surface look like a deal. And this is how we've created some of our very best deals as well. Taking a property on the surface that looks like, just a fair, fair to less than fair cash flowing property, do something creative, like add rentable space to that property, or add an addition to that property, add a unit to that property in the back, increase the rent ratio to a point that's favorable for us, which also increases value and will allow you to pull off the BRRRR strategy as well. So in some of these hot markets like Tampa and like Huntsville, where I live, you got to get creative in order to create deals. If you just buy what's being given to you and take it at face value, a lot of times, in today's market, this is October 1st, 2020, it's very difficult to find something that will cash flow. So, and you want to, also part of this, it's going to depend on where you want to buy. So John, where are most of your properties? What class area are most of your properties located in? Would you say A, B, C, or below that?
All of our properties right now are in that like B to A, very high A actually, to low B. A lot we bought, were initially probably high C and then ended up becoming high Bs, which is I think what you want. But now if you want to find a really good deal in our area, I mean that you're in the Cs, which We're not, most of our tenant base, we're not really looking, we don't have any Section 8. That's just not an area that I know a lot of people do very well with Section 8 housing, but we're not really looking to invest, to be in that market. So that's the challenge is not only just finding something that's in that like B range that where the numbers make sense.
Yeah. Something that's not lost on me, you mentioned a second ago, which I wanted to quickly bring up, is you mentioned your dad was the GM at a casino there for quite a while and is now investing in real estate. I think it's interesting that, the casino is about being in a situation where the upside outweighs the downside, right? They got to make money off of the casino's operations or else they won't be in business, right? It's not lost on me that he is investing in real estate because real estate, if you do it right, the upside outweighs the downside. And I think that's just smart, right? You need to be playing a game that you have a much better chance of winning than losing. So I see smart people placing smart bets in real estate and doing it the right way. And you may have some failure along the way, but as long as you keep at it, there is a tremendous upside to it, as opposed to the downside. And that's why I love real estate. Let's talk about, you said you own townhomes, you own condos, and you own, like duplexes to fourplexes. For those that haven't invested in townhomes and condos, and I've appraised all this stuff, let's talk about the differences. What's different about a single family house versus a condo?
I think the first thing is just the maintenance issues, at least in my experience, one thing I definitely don't like about townhomes or condos or HOAs. Those just eat at your margins and those are costs that you have to spend or expenses you have every month, regardless of whether your unit is rented or not. So I know a lot of people are hesitant to invest in those things, but in my experience, the HOAs, the kind of maintenance you have to do on a single family home, the lawn, the yard care, the roof when it leaks, the broken, broken windows, just a lot of things that happen on the exterior of a single family home or a duplex, you don't run into those maintenance issues on a condo, or most townhomes, that's taken care of. The HOA pays for that. Or, in a condo situation, you have a professional property management company on site all the time that's handling that. So, in my experience, I think that it's kind of almost a wash in terms of those kind of costs, especially if your HOAs include things like water and trash and sewer and cable, which a lot of HOAs in our area are starting to include. So if you can find a townhome or a condo where the HOAs are reasonable that include a lot of those expenses, such as like water and things like that, that's a feature that you can offer your tenants saying, hey, your rent includes water in there. And you can raise your rents a little bit more because of that. And you're going to have less maintenance issues because you're not dealing with having to pay someone to come outside and cut your yard. The HOA, takes care of that. So, I actually like condos and townhomes if you can find one with not a, with a good HOA that doesn't, involve that includes a lot of amenities with it. So.
Yeah. I looked at purchasing some townhomes and was honestly shocked at how high the HOA fees were. So let's run through some numbers, if you don't mind. I'd love to run through some numbers on one of your townhomes,
Sure.
on what it rents for, what the HOA fees are monthly, what utilities are included for the tenants and that kind of thing. And this is something that the audience really needs to pay attention to because if you go in to buy a townhouse or a condo or frankly even a house and you don't look at the HOA dues, this could really eat into your profit big time. And you actually could make an investing mistake if you don't factor HOA cost into your numbers. So really always look at what the HOA costs are going to be, especially on townhomes and condos, because that's going to be there. But yeah, let's talk about one of your townhomes, if you don't mind sharing some numbers on one of those.
I can tell you about the first one I bought because it's kind of a mess sort of right now. So the condo I bought back in 2000 or the townhome I bought back in 2009, I got a good deal on it. But the reason I got a good deal on it was because it's a 9-townhome community, and the reason I got a good deal on it was because it was a foreclosure, and there was a lot of foreclosures in there. So with the foreclosures meant that people weren't paying their HOAs, so our HOA reserves were depleted. So when I bought the townhome, the HOAs were 250, and it includes water, trash, sewer, exterior maintenance and exterior insurance and all that stuff. So 250 in our area is cheap. I mean, that's a really good HOA. But obviously, as the townhomes were all sold off and people got in there, we needed to replenish those reserves so the HOAs go up. And they've continued to go up time and time again. Especially now that we're looking at possibly needing a new roof and now we're up for an assessment. So, for those of you that don't know, when you buy a townhome or a condo or anything that has an HOA involved, at any time they can pretty much say, hey, everyone has to throw in $4,000 for a new roof, or we're painting the side of the building, or anything that your reserves don't cover. You can be called for one of those assessments, and I'm getting called for one of those assessments at that first townhome right now. So those are things you want to definitely think about, when you're budgeting, because at some point, no matter what, you'll probably get some sort of an assessment. And it can be as little as $500 or as much as $10,000. You never really know.
What kind of time advance notice do they give you on this kind of thing? If they're putting a new roof on the property, do you have a notice saying, hey, you're going to owe $4,000 by next month? Or is it, 6 months? Or they let you pay monthly? Or how does that work?
Yeah, well, it depends on the HOA. I'm a member of a couple different HOAs, which I recommend to everyone. If never hold a t never hold a, an official office position in an HOA, because it's terrible. But I'm a member of a couple different HOAs, and the one I'm talking about with the new roof is it's been poorly managed and poorly run for years. We use a property management company that's not good, and they mismanage a lot of stuff. But then I own another townhome that's only 6 units, where it's run by the 6 owners, and it's very well run and very structured, and we plan things out way in advance, and we know a year ahead of time if we're going to have any sort of assessments or what we're saving for. Whereas this other townhome situation, I mean, we'll get a month's notice that we might have to give a $3,000-$4,000 check to pay for roof or new siding or something like that. So
Wow.
yeah, it really just depends on your HOA. And at the time when I bought this, the HOA seemed fine. There are things you can't predict over a long period of time. But I just bought a townhome in this area, Plant City. It's a little bit more of a kind of a farming area. It's where they pick all the strawberries and stuff here in Plant City. And I did a lot of research and read through the HOA docs, every single line. I wanted to see their financials to see what they had in their reserves. I did my homework to make sure that they were in good standing, because I'm getting burned on this first one when I bought it when I had no experience with that. So.
Yeah, that's a really great lesson, and thanks for sharing that. So on the first one, you said 250 HOA dues. That's monthly, right?
That's monthly, and that was
Okay.
when I bought it. Now they're at almost $500, so it's
Okay.
gone up significantly.
So they've almost doubled. And how long have you owned this property?
We haven't owned that prop for 11 years, so I mean,
Okay.
it's been some time, yeah.
Yeah. Did it escalate? Like $25, $50 a year, or did they jump it up $100 one year and three, how'd they escalate that?
It was gradual. It would go up 100, 100. 25 every year for the most part. And then there were some years where if it went up, it went up over $100. It wasn't just,
Yeah.
20 every year. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so there's a bit of a sunk cost in there, which is the water. Of course, my single family properties, my tenants pay their own water. So that's going to be something that you could, tell the tenants, hey, your water is covered, right? So you can charge slightly higher rent because they're not going to have a water bill. But what kind of rent are you getting on this property a month?
On that property, I'm getting $2,500 a month.
Okay, 2,500, which is really great rent. How big is this property?
It's big, it's a 2,100 square foot, 3 bed, 3.5 bath, 2 car garage, townhome. And for the South Tampa area, and really, I think any area, 2,100 square foot townhome is pretty big. But I mean, that's bigger than most of the houses in South Tampa, so it's a good size place.
Yeah. And you know, the di- so one of the differences between townhomes and single families is going to be that townhomes are connected to other units, and you're sharing common walls, that kind of thing. One difference with townhomes and condos is condos have common areas. A lot of times they'll have, you know, if it's a high rise condo building, you'll have, you know, an entrance into kind of a lobby, you'll have elevators, that kind of thing. A lot of townhouses I see are kind of row townhouses, right? They're spread out. They may be two story, but you've got a first and second story to your townhouse, and you're connected on both sides by other units. So what are some differences between owning townhouses and owning condos that you've noticed, if any?
Well, you know, most condos, they have a lot more units. So, and a lot more owners in that condominium complex. So let's say, like the sign example that you used, if you had a 10 townhome community and there was a sign in the front and that sign burns down, and they have to, and there's an assessment for that. So they go to all the 10 townhome owners and they say, hey, everyone's going to have to fork over, like, you know, the cost of the new sign divided by 10, there's only 10 people to foot that cost. Whereas in a condo, if the sign burns down and you have 200 units in that condominium and they did an assessment, it's going to be a lot smaller because there's more units to foot that bill. So, you know, the bigger the complex, at least in my experience, the cheaper the HOA has been because there's more owners paying, paying to upkeep those common areas like pools. You know, a lot of places now have mailbox banks. They don't have like individual mailboxes at the door. It's just one area. You know, some of them have like car wash stations or those like lobby areas that you're speaking of. Those HOAs tend to be a little bit lower just because there's more residents paying that bill. So,
yeah. So you mentioned owning townhomes, condos, duplexes, all the way to fourplexes. Has one of these asset types been your favorite, and how have they performed compared to one another?
I mean, multifamily has always been my preference. And, you know, now when I work with agents and they ask what I'm looking for, there are two things. The units that have the ability to build an accommodation dwelling, like we spoke of, and multifamily. I've always found those get the best returns, those cash flow the best. You know, if you have in a fourplex situation, if one of them is vacant, you're still making money on the other three. You're only paying one tax bill for four doors, one insurance policy for one door, one lawn guy for four doors. So to me, multifamily is definitely the way to go, you know, if you can afford it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one reason I love multifamily. So what's been your strategy? How did you finance all this? Did you use the BRRRR strategy? Do you own these in cash? Did you use leverage? How did you go about doing this?
Well, you know, the first one was just a traditional, you know, mortgage. But then, you know, with the partnership with my dad, we paid everything in cash, you know, so we've been very fortunate to be able to own the majority of this with no debt. Which is, you know, now we're at that stage where we want to do these kind of the BRRRR strategies, the longest BRRRR of all time, probably. It's almost good. But, you know, we're at the point now where we definitely have a lot of equity in our properties that we can pull out, and use this to purchase more properties. But the challenge is, like you said, is, and this, even in selling some of the properties that we might want to get out of, is where do we put that money if you don't have a deal lined up and finding that deal. And, you know, the other thing too, we really realized over time is especially if you're, you know, we're not full-time, investors the way some people you've had in your podcast, and it's not our only job, you know? So we're not doing this all day, every day, 24/7, 365. So we've learned a lot, probably a little bit slower than maybe some other people that are doing this more full time. But you get to a point to where you realize those South Tampa A class properties, like, yeah, they cash flow well, but, you know, they're also very expensive to own. The tax bill on there is a lot higher. The HOAs that you're paying, and you look at those costs and what you're actually bringing home and what the equity is. And you might say, well, it might be smart to sell this or refinance it because I can go buy in a lower class area where I actually might cash flow more, as opposed to staying in this A class property area where, you know, you have these costs are just getting astronomical there. So that's really what we're spending our time doing, is crunching those numbers, figuring out which properties are the best to either sell or refinance or stay in, and then what areas, of town we want to get into next. So.
That's awesome. You know, there's many different ways to invest in real estate, and I love that you guys picked a way that you're comfortable with and have made massive progress. You know, owning 26 doors with no debt essentially is an amazing feat in and of itself. And I'm sure during COVID, you guys were resting a lot easier than a lot of other people because you didn't have all the lenders to worry about. You still had property taxes and tenants and that kind of thing, but you weren't as concerned as those that were highly leveraged. You know, there's of course different schools of thought on this, but you know, there's some people who just want to own their properties in cash and they want to sleep easy at night and just let the cash flow support their lifestyle, and some just completely stop working. Others do what you guys are doing. They run their businesses and they have their real estate kind of running on the side. And actually, I think more people do the second than the first. And that's what I'm doing, is I'm running my own business. My wife runs her business. And then we've got our investment properties running on autopilot, building up equity, being paid down, their cash flowing nicely, and that kind of thing. I'm always tinkering with the real estate portfolio, trying to grow that and maximize my return on investment, return on equity, while also running my other business. And so I feel like I'm diversified there. One thing I quickly learned as I was diving into this whole real estate investing game was that you kind of feel like people are telling you that you should be investing in real estate and that's all you need to do, but it's very difficult to only invest in real estate and live off that cash flow unless you've got a pretty massive portfolio or you've got really robust cash flow coming in from your investments. It's possible, but when you start off, if you're throwing all your eggs in the basket of just investing in real estate, it's going to be a lot higher risk. So I've had many more people on the podcast that are working a job like you're doing and like I'm doing and are building their portfolio on the side, but they haven't quit their jobs, than I have that just live off their investment portfolio. Because, I mean, think about it. If you've got a 20-door portfolio that's making $200 a door, you've got $4,000 of profit a month. So you're only at 48K a month or a year. My family couldn't live off 48K a year. So you know, and so if you're, so you got to get, I mean, you know, 40 doors at 200, you're at 80K, you know, what, 96K a year. My family would still have issues with that. Like, we could cut stuff, but we're above that as we are now. So, and I've got a family of five, right? I've got little kids and all that, but you know, you got to figure out what you need to live on. But my recommendation to those that are building their investment portfolios, figure out what it is you need to live on, and then what it is you need to live on in addition to savings and what you could grow your nest egg with, and then make that your passive income goal. And don't quit your job or your main income source too soon, because that will affect the goose that's laying the golden egg, which is the real estate. And I remember Brandon Turner saying this on one of their podcast episodes. He talked about, you know, he bought this apartment complex and quit his job and was just kind of hanging out. And he was like, "Yeah, I'm getting kind of bored. And on top of that, I don't have very much money." So, I kudos to you for continuing your businesses and stuff while doing this. And so, with all this equity in these properties, what are you looking to do next? What's your strategy going forward?
My first strategy is, a couple of months ago, I really had to sit down, especially when, I'm sure when you have kids coming for the first time, it really forces you to get all your stuff together and really sit down and plan. And we had been buying these properties with no real plan, just kind of, okay, if you find a property, we'll get it if the numbers work. So I was really forced to sit down with my wife and my family to plan it out. And that's what I would suggest to anyone is, where do you want to be 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now? And that's what we did. I sat down and figured that out. And what my goal is to be able to hand each one of my daughters, 30 properties each, or, or 60 total properties and split it in half. And then, based off of what we're doing now, it's like, so how do we get there? And in order for me to get there, we got to buy 2 to 3 properties a year. And in order for me to get the cash flow that I want to them to be able to make, to have just passive income that's just, coming to them, we got to make about $250 a door that we buy, which I think is something that's very doable. And it's not insanely aggressive. And it's challenging sometimes. And Josiah, that's one of the, I know we spoke about this, one of the reasons I really like your podcast is, you listen to the Bigger Pockets stuff, which is great. And it's so informative and helpful. And I recommend everyone do that. It can be a little intimidating sometimes because, some of the guys, they own like, 1,000 unit complexes in Maui and LA, and and it's their life, it's their career. But there's lots of people out there who are just, who their goals aren't to be that. It's a little bit more, hey, I just want to own a couple of rental properties, or scoop up 1 or 2 a year. So I really think the first thing you got to do is figure out what you want to do, your long-term goals, and then it's easier to implement what you need to do to get there. And so we did that, and my goal is to buy 2 to 3 properties a year, and hold them as rentals. And have them cash flow at least $250 a door, while also pursuing, partnerships with people I have, like, repurposing or rezoning, single family homes to be have a accommodation dwelling, or mother-in-law suite in the back, while also having, I wouldn't really call it syndication, but having a couple other, friends and acquaintances that have money that want to get into real estate and possibly, buy that occasional bigger deal that comes along, like a 24 unit complex or something like that, that I'm partnering with people on. And those are really my three kind of avenues, real estate wise, that we're looking to go down. So.
Yeah, I love it. And your story is similar to mine and similar to a lot of other people. You start off with a house hack, you move into something like, buying a townhouse or a condo or a duplex, something along those lines, something 1 to 4 family. You start buying some more of those. You get to a point that you realize, okay, I could continue along this path of horizontal growth, meaning I could buy more 1 to 4 family and just buy more and more and more of those and grow my portfolio that way. Or I could grow vertically, which is buying a multifamily deal, And so I've noticed that many people, their strategy evolves over time, and maybe they start off saying, I want 20 single families. This is all I want. And then as they're going, maybe they get 12 single families and they're like, you know what? I want to buy a 16 unit apartment deal next, or I want to buy a self-storage deal or something like that. Because you start recognizing the economies of scale advantages you gain by buying many rentable units under one roof or in one deal. And there's really no difference, as far as I can tell, in owning a 10 unit deal, a 10 door portfolio, which is 10 single family houses, and a 10 unit apartment complex, outside of the fact that the 10 unit apartment complex happens a lot faster and you have a lot more advantages under just management, one tax bill, stuff you're talking about there. As far as the rent, like, you've got 10 tenants in both situations.
Exactly.
So if you're wanting to scale, buying more units under one roof, it goes way faster. That being said, there's nothing wrong with owning 10 single families. We own single family properties and they've done very well. And I've got a friend who's got over 100 single families and he's got more than $10 million equity in his portfolio. You can become very wealthy just owning single families. So it's really going to come down to what you're comfortable with, what you want to do. But I recognized quickly, just from the work I've done in the 1 to 4 family space, that there is a lot of inertia to each deal you do. And so, I'm working on a 120 door apartment complex right now. I'm really hoping it works out because, I've been working on this for a while, trying to get an apartment deal, with the caveat that, like, I haven't gotten one yet. But I do know that when I do get one, I'm going to go from 20 doors to, in this situation, adding 120 doors, so I could go from 20 to 140 just with one deal. So
Awesome.
I like where you're heading with your mindset on this and what you're looking to do. And I think others taking equity, taking some money off the table, if you will, and repurposing it into some other opportunities out there that are creative even, I think it's a really good time to do that considering the kind of market that we're in right now. So, and also partnering with others. You mentioned looking to partner with others, possibly syndication. What's your strategy there? Like, what are you going for as far as working with others to build your portfolio?
Yeah. So one thing I've noticed is, now that I'm getting into, most people when they're reaching their mid 30s and then their 40s, you're kind of getting towards your peak earning years. And I have, friends that have money and they want to invest in things. And a lot of them don't know anything about real estate. So I'm kind of at the point now where I'm finding other people that have experience or knowledge in areas that I do not. And they might need my help for more of a property management side of things and identifying properties and kind of forming a team to where I could take a friend of mine who knows absolutely nothing about the real estate world or being a landlord or owning investment properties or anything. And being able to help them go through the entire process from like finding the house, fixing it up or renting it, whatever they need. Cause right now the majority of people, when we started, we had to find a realtor and they had to find us the house. And that realtor didn't really know a lot about, investment properties. And then we had to find a property man, like a contractor who could help us fix it up to be, cause there's a big difference between a contractor that will fix up your personal home with high end finishes and one that knows how to make something rentable. They're very different things. You got to find that guy and then you got to find a property manager that can get it rented for you and knows what to do when things break. And you got to deal with all these different people to make that work. Whereas you can just have, or you could have a team like or one person that can do the whole process for you. And kind of just make it remote. So you truly passive where you're not doing anything. So that's kind of my goal throughout this process is finding the properties that fit my portfolio, but helping my friends who want to get maybe only just one or two investment properties, helping them throughout the entire process, as opposed to, them having to find 50 people to help them do it.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
That's great. That's actually how I built my entire portfolio. I mean, I owned properties myself before building the current portfolio that I have, but I sold a lot of those properties and I wish I hadn't. I sold a lot of those properties, went to graduate school, got married, paid off a ton of debt, basically got, became debt free, and then decided I was going to go back into real estate. And I had a really close friend, he had a great year financially, had money he wanted to put into real estate, felt like he didn't know what he was doing and wanted to team up. And so we struck a deal. We'll split everything 50-50 after you get paid back your initial investment. And I'll basically run point on finding us deals, managing the deals, getting them refinanced, getting tenants in there, getting the managers in there. He'll front the money. And it's worked out really well for us. So this is a really creative way for a lot of you out there trying to get into real estate investing or trying to scale and running up against this roadblock of, I don't have enough capital of my own to go do any more deals. You can go out and partner up with people. There are a lot of people that have a lot of capital, but aren't comfortable with investing in real estate, aren't comfortable with tackling this stuff on their own, that could really use someone that knows what they're doing and would be very open to the idea of teaming up in some form or fashion. So this is a really great way to build a portfolio. And you hear the word, the phrase OPM or other people's money thrown around a lot. I think some people should throw around other people's time, OPT, right? Because, sure. Because time is money, right? And so I put my time in, my partner put his money in. To me, they're basically the same thing because I could be using that time elsewhere to go earn money and then put the money in, or I could skip that and just use his money and my time. He's leveraging my time. I'm leveraging his money. It was a win-win. So I think it's very smart to look for a partner that can put in OPT, other people's time. They can put in their own time, or leveraging OPM, other people's money. And if you're doing one or the other, and it's a complementary asset to what you have, you can really grow a portfolio while doing that. So very cool. Well, hey, John, let's start wrapping this thing up. Are there any books that you recommend? You're obviously very entrepreneurial. You're always tinkering with businesses. It seems like you did a cleaning business. You got this franchise that you're operating now. You've gone into real estate with your dad. What are some books that you like reading that you could recommend?
Just from a more entrepreneurial standpoint, the one that really kind of changed it all for me, it's called Start Something That Matters. It's by Blake Mycoskie, the guy that started TOMS Shoes. It just really is a book about doing something that you're truly passionate about and that, really helps people. And those are the businesses that are successful. So I highly recommend that one to everyone. I really read it like once a year just to kind of stay inspired by it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then obviously, cliche, the Rich Dad Poor Dad's a really good one. Honestly, I know I've been in real estate for a while, but I'm reading the Burr book right now, which is a great one. And I'm always reading things about property management or being a landlord, just because it's always, the technology and the way things are changing. It's always nice to brush up on your skills. You can always learn a new like cost saving method or a way to invest your money or save time. Something like the 4-Hour Work Week is really good. Anything by Tim Ferriss I really like too.
Oh yeah, I'm a big Tim Ferriss fan. I didn't even ask you this. Do you self-manage all these deals, or you have third party?
I do. I self-manage all of them. Occasionally, I'll use a local property management company to get our units rented if it's a new home that we bought and I just don't really understand the tenant type, or I don't have time to do it because I'm running, one of my other businesses. But the monthly management, we do that all ourselves.
Very cool. Yeah, I read that book, Start Something That Matters, years ago, and I really enjoyed it. I highly recommend people checking that one out. That's a great recommendation. Well, John, where can people connect with you and find out more about you?
You want to come to my Instagram page. It's at jfonzie84. It's Fonzie. That's it has all my like Lego art, and it's and now I'm going to be starting to chronicle some of the real estate stuff too. So it might be somewhat entertaining for you, or at very least your kids if they're into Legos.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I'm gonna have to check this Lego thing out. That's really cool. Well, this has been awesome, man. I really appreciate your time and you sharing your story, and I'm looking forward to keeping up with your progress going forward. So, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It was fun.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please connect with me on Instagram at Daily Real Estate Investor or via email at josiahsmelser@gmail.com. My new book titled Dream It and Build It, How to Crush Your Real Estate Investing Goals is out. You can get it either in digital or physical format on Amazon. Once you've read the book, please leave me a review. Tune in next time for another episode of the Daily Real Estate Investor as we both join in our financial freedom journey.